But right now, it's Wednesday, and that means it's time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining the program today is Roger Whittle, Managing Editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, thanks for coming on the show.
Nice to be here, Carl.
Also with us on the line is David Montgomery, political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And David, good to talk with you again as well.
Good to be on.
Well, on Monday at a news conference held by state Democrats, Representative Kathy Tyler revealed documents that Yoak Ballin, who ran the EB-5 program, was working for the state when he signed a contract with his own private firm to manage EB-5 investments. Roger, is this information that wasn't available before? Is this something new?
Well, we knew that Mr. Ballin was a state employee and then formed his own company to run the EB-5 investment program. I don't think we had known that when he signed the contracts to run the EB-5 program, he was still a state employee. So he was basically signed a contract on both ends for the state and for his own company, which doesn't seem right.
David Montgomery, what exactly are these documents? What are they saying?
The key new document that we had, And it had been out there, but it hadn't gotten the attention, and people hadn't formed the conclusions yet. But the key document was a memorandum that was signed in January of 2008 between the South Dakota International Business Institute and its head, its director, Yoak Ballin, and SDRC Inc., which is a company that Ballin himself had founded 5 days prior, although Ballin had someone else sign for the company. So essentially he was signing a contract with his own company, which is like a new wrinkle. We had previously known that there had been the privatization which was 2 years later in December 2009 that had given the full management of South Dakota's EB-5 program to SDRC Inc. But this memorandum, which called for SDRC Inc. to assist SDIBI, was something that hadn't gotten attention before. And I guess really sort of crystallizes some of the overlaps and conflicts of interest that epitomize South Dakota's management of the EB-5 program, especially in its later years.
Now, these are, David, public documents? These weren't anything that were suddenly uncovered and just showed up?
My understanding is that this document had been released from an open records request that a Sioux Falls attorney had filed. I don't know if it had also come from other places, but it had been referenced and discussed on some blogs. There's a throwaway reference to it in an article in the Aberdeen American News from earlier this year, but it wasn't until the Democratic, South Dakota Democratic Party distributed these documents this week that people sort of drew the conclusion and really focused in on the fact that Yoak Ballin had signed this contract with his own company.
This is this Monday press conference was the latest one from the Democrats regarding the EB-5 program. They've got another one coming up later this afternoon. Roger Whittle, is this a good way or the best way for Democrats to handle this issue with these repeated press conferences?
Well, they apparently think so, and it has been getting in all the newspapers. So, you know, they tried to do it through the legislature and were stonewalled by the other party. So I think they think this is their really only path to get this out into the public. And you have to agree, it's working.
It's you know, how much should this be a partisan issue, though, Roger? Isn't this to just get that information out there and try to find out to the best that we can with the documents that what exactly happened and what went on?
Well, no, you know, it shouldn't be a partisan issue, but in this day and age, pretty much everything is a partisan issue. This is about government doing the right thing, and it appears by these documents that there were some problems in that area and that there were members of the administration that were lining their own pockets, as it were. But it definitely should not be a partisan issue, but, you know, these days, what isn't?
Well, the Democrats, when they're letting the press know about the conference coming up this afternoon, they said in the email they have more explosive new documents. David, how explosive are these documents?
I mean, there haven't been any smoking guns. These are all incremental additions. And what the Democrats are trying to do is keep the story alive, keep it in the papers, on the TV newscast every couple days, so that people keep paying attention with it all the way through the election day. And the media management strategy, it's a pretty effective one. The danger that the Democrats face is it seems like they're keep calling news conferences and not delivering the goods, then it's sort of have the risk of a boy who cried wolf situation, in which people sort of stop paying attention to them because they're calling too many news conferences and overselling them, overhyping them. So they delivered on Monday, although perhaps inadvertently, the focus that the Democrats were pushing was not what We the Argus Leader and I think some of the other news stations picked up on. Their emphasis was not on Boland signing the contract for themselves. They were trying to make a pitch about the total money invested and allegedly lost South Dakota in the program. So it'll be interesting to see what if they can manage to keep delivering the goods here.
I'm curious as to how this is so far affecting Mike Rounds, Senate candidate Mike Rounds, who is governor at the time of the EB-5 program. Roger, it seems that so far anyway, he hasn't distanced himself from the program. He's essentially embraced it.
Oh, he really has. He has done absolutely nothing to distance himself. He still is claiming it was a good program. It brought a lot of money into the states. It created a lot of jobs. He's sticking with his guns on that point.
Is that the best strategy, do you think, Roger?
I guess we'll see. I saw the latest poll came out. His opponents are gaining a little, and eventually he's going to have to face up to some of the things that are coming out, like when his employee signed a contract with that employee's private company. You know, there's got to be some degree of oversight there from the head of the administration. He hasn't addressed any of that yet. He's just claiming that it's a good program, it's a federal program. He's trying to kind of embrace it and distance himself from it at the same time, saying it's totally a federal program. So I think eventually it's gonna hit home a little bit more for him.
David, do you agree that this might hit home a little bit more?
I mean, as I said, Democrats have yet to find the smoking gun here. This is a very complicated program, and the question is whether they can find a way to communicate about EB-5 in a way that makes ordinary voters who haven't been paying attention to the intricacies of this both pay attention and form a conclusion that this program is bad and reflects poorly on Mike Rounds. We saw Rick Weiland try to do that with his ad hitting Mike Rounds for backing so-called citizenship for sale. And, of course, the Democrats are trying to do this. So it's a tricky situation because it's such a complicated issue with riddled with acronyms and money and strange names and all that. So the burden is really on the Democrats to make the political case, which is different than what reporters are doing, which is sort of trying to explain and expand on all this.
Now, for Governor Dennis Dugard, who was Lieutenant Governor under Mike Rounds, so far, Roger, he's essentially said, well, I didn't really have anything to do with it. What has been his position regarding EB-5 when he's been asked?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's washed his hands of it from the beginning, which seems to be working for him.
Well, we just mentioned polls. There's been a couple of polls on the Senate race, one from KSFY, sponsored by KSFY, KOTA, and the Aberdeen American News, which shows that Republican Mike Rounds is leading with 39%, Democrat Rick Weiland at 28%, Independent Larry Pressler at 25%. At the same time, there's a CBS New York Times poll that has Rounds at 43%, Weiland at 29%, Pressler and 6%. David, I don't know if you've had the opportunity to look at either of these polls and find out what methods they were using, but what is the reason for what seems to be quite different results?
Well, the polls can be very varying depending on the methods they use, the wording of the questions they ask, when they're conducted, et cetera. So in general, I would advise people to not make too much out of any single one poll, but rather to look at polls as a whole, a big group of polls, looking at changes between from one to the other, trends over time, et cetera. And but still, at the same time, I think these polls do show a relatively solid picture in which Mike Rounds has a solid plurality of support, but is under 50%. And the people opposed to Mike Rounds are being divided up between three candidates. If the anti-Rounds vote can consolidate behind one candidate, then this could be a real race. But so far, with Rick Warren and Larry Pressler in particular splitting up the anti-Rounds vote, it's a recipe for Rounds to waltz into a victory.
Roger, what are your thoughts on the polls that we've seen so far, particularly these two that I cited?
Well, David made a good point. You've got Weiland and Pressler splitting the anti-Rounds vote, but it would be literally impossible for that vote to be consolidated under either one, because I think those people who are voting for either Weiland or Pressler are doing it for different reasons. Probably the Pressler people are there because Rounds isn't conservative enough, and the Weiland people are voting for him because Rounds is too conservative. So it would be nice if somebody could consolidate those votes and give Rounds a run for some money, but I don't see that happening.
The KSFY... go ahead, David.
I wouldn't quite characterize it that same way. The Pressler, from looking in the crosstabs of these polls, the Pressler voters aren't necessarily coming from the far right of the Republican Party. That's sort of where the Howey voters are coming from, who's considerably lower in the polls. It is also worth noting that there is a strong trend in polling of independent and third-party candidates performing strongly several months before the election, but ultimately fading by election day. It doesn't happen in all cases, but potentially that could happen here. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Pressler if he's able to get resources to keep getting his name out and continue making the case, or if he's going to get overwhelmed by the superior resources of the Democratic and Republican candidates.
One of the interesting things about the KSFY, KOTA, and Aberdeen American News poll, they polled what would the race be like if it was just Rounds and Weiland. Had it at 44% with the Rounds and Weiland 42. And I'm wondering if that suggests then that Larry Pressler is taking votes away from Rick Weiland then, and if that's the case, if Weiland needs to go on more of an offensive against Larry Pressler along with Mike Rounds. What are your thoughts, Roger?
Well, Weiland, that poll shows that he's doing a good job trying to catch up with Rounds. I mean, when he first started, of course, he was miles behind Rounds. He seems to have caught up in that case, but for him to go on the offensive against Pressler might be a little tough, because he's kind of got limited resources himself, so to be fighting those two battles on the same front might be too much for him.
Well, moving on to another bit of news that came out this week. Representatives from the Associated School Boards of South Dakota, the school administrators of South Dakota, and the South Dakota United School Association proposed a summertime penny sales tax to help increase teacher pay. David, does this seem like an idea that lawmakers will be very receptive to?
South Dakota lawmakers are unlikely to be very receptive to any sort of tax increase. It's the sort of thing that may be more likely to succeed at the ballot box. This summer tourism sales tax increase was a big proposal from former Senator Stan Adelstein during recent years. He was proposing to use it to make up some of the cuts of 2011, and it got shot down repeatedly. I think it's getting more support, but to get two-thirds support, which is what a tax increase like this would need under South Dakota legislature's rules, that's a really strong uphill battle. And even if you have unified support from Democrats and Governor Dennis Dugard backing it, which it certainly neither one is assured. It's still a very heavy lift inside the Republican caucus to get the remaining extra votes.
Well, Roger, what do you think of the proposal itself?
Oh, I think it's a good idea. They're talking the tax would raise $40 to $45 million and be able to increase each teacher salary an average of $4,000 a year, which, you know, can't be a bad thing. I know a lot of school districts up here are having troubles attracting good teachers and keeping good teachers. I think I heard Watertown School District finally filled all their openings at the latest date they ever had. So there's definitely a problem there with attracting teachers, and increased pay can only help.
David, are there other proposals out there that find some way to boost teacher pay in South Dakota?
There are some other ideas being talked about. One of the things that isn't so much to boost, but to equalize some of these other resources that schools get, things from like the bank franchise tax or fine money, to sort of pool that and distribute it evenly around the state rather than letting it remain with whichever district those sources were located in, which, of course, that just basically tips the haves against the have-nots right now and makes progress there difficult. But I mean, generally speaking, it's generally acknowledged that to significantly increase teacher pay in South Dakota, you're going to need more revenue, which is going to have to come from more tax increases, whether at the state level or at the local level.
So what do you think will happen, David, in this upcoming legislative session? Do you think teacher pay, even if this proposal won't go anywhere, that maybe some other proposals might come up? I think it sounds like it's generally acknowledged that teacher retention and teacher pay is something of a problem in the state.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a number of different proposals. After Democrats will have a number of ideas. There will probably be some Republican proposals, too. I'll be interested to see what the governor proposes. If there's surplus money in the budget, schools could get an increase over and above the formula, which could blunt, but certainly wouldn't eliminate the agitation for more money for teacher salaries. I think the real question is whether or not schools can create get people interested enough and create a public demand for higher teacher salaries. Rather than leaving it sort of the abstract level of lobbyists going back and forth. If they can get the public on their side, we could see some movement on this. Otherwise, we're just likely to see tinkering around the edges.
Roger, how likely do you think it'll be that they can get the public would get behind this and say, yeah, we do need to increase our the pay for our teachers?
I think the public could get behind that. I mean, nobody likes to be last in the country in anything, which is where we are in teacher pay. So, but I think you have to look at it even broader. You might have a problem convincing other occupations in the state. We probably also have among the lowest paid, you know, nurses in the country, certainly the lowest paid journalists in the country. So, you know, where do you stop is becomes the question. But, you know, teachers, everybody knows that we're among the lowest paid teacher states, and I think they would be willing to do something about that.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Roger, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you.
And David, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.